Welcome to Career Tools. This week, Working from Home Will Stunt Your Career, Chapter 2, Results, Part 1. The questions this class answers are, what effect will working from home have on my career? And what should I consider when debating whether to work from home?
Folks, you may already be thinking about January of 2022. It's right around the corner. And so I thought I'd let you know about conferences we have coming up, public conferences you can sign up for at the website. We're in Seattle on the 11th and 12th, a virtual effective communicator conference and an effective manager conference. We're in Austin on the 18th, 19th, and 20th. We're doing effective hiring manager, effective manager, and effective communicator. And then late in January and early in February, we are in Silicon Valley doing effective manager and effective communicator as well. Hope that helps you in your planning. Maybe talk to your boss about getting you some budget and come to the website and sign up. We hope to see you there.
Andrew, we started this series, I'm not sure when people will have listened to it, a couple of weeks ago for everybody, I think, by the time you listen to it, with two parts about making the decision to work from home. And one of the things we pointed out was, if you're basing your decision of whether or not you want to continue to work from home on the last 18 months, assuming that you're listening to this in December of 2020, if you're basing it on your pandemic experience.
2021,
you're right. Apparently, I lost a year, several. If you're basing your judgment on that experience, working from home when the rest of the world is doing what's normal, when part of your team or most of your team is working in the office, is a very different experience. So if you think you've made that decision and you haven't gone and listened to those two casts or read them, if you have a personal license, it'll be way faster. Please do that first before we try and explain this part of Chapter 2 and Chapter 3 are going to be similar in that what we're actually going to talk about are the two things that are critical to your career, which are results and relationships, and the two things that are affected by working from home, which are results and relationships. And we're going to talk about how they're affected, and then we're going to talk about what you can do to mitigate that if you decide that working from home permanently is right for you in the future. And there were some positives, even during a pandemic, of working from home. There's no commute. You can get your household chores done. You can not necessarily need a work wardrobe. You know, you don't have to have three suits or whatever. You can be home for deliveries. I'm waiting for my groceries to arrive right now. You can have more flexibility around caring for children or family. You can have a more comfortable work environment at the perfect temperature and with the right music, which is not always the same when you're in an office and other people get to choose.
Which helps with, you know, those personal productivity benefits, right?
Yeah.
Those things where as you're working from home, you can, you know, control the temperature, control the environment, which means you can create a situation where you have fewer interruptions. You know, people who run good meetings, right? When you have that type of environment, you can have your meetings be more focused. You can have less interruptions or distractions in those meetings. The autonomy in and of itself has been showing, at least in the data that we see, it to be increasing productivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just being in control of your own environment increases your productivity to a certain extent.
Exactly.
And that's it. But working from home might still stifle your career or stunt your career, as we said. Being out of sight and out of mind means potentially being passed over for the best projects and promotions and potentially even pay rises because people don't see what you're doing. It's not so much that they don't believe you're doing any work, it's just that it doesn't register in their mind the same way. So in this chapter, we're going to talk about the actions you can take to mitigate the effect of working from home when the rest of your team doesn't on your results.
Right. Our outline for today is the work from home discount on results, starting with the lack of objective performance management to give your work full credit and the less opportunities to step up or volunteer or be seen. Then we're going to talk about what you can do. And what you can do is you can develop and maintain and grow and track your performance. You can ask more questions up front. Proactively report work status, ask for and respond well to feedback, and increase communication everywhere.
Yes. It's a nice broad everywhere. Just
right.
More communication. As Mark always says, more communication is better. So we're going to talk about there's a work from home discount on results. If you know what a discount is in the store, you know, when something is damaged, for example, then you get a discount on it. And there is a discount on your results, meaning your results don't count for as much or they're not as good when you're working from home. And results can be differently defined. So for this purposes, results are the achievement of the objectives that the organization has laid out for you. And that's not necessarily what's written in your annual review. Those objectives are not always the objectives that the organization wants you to achieve. And knowing what's spoken and unspoken is a really, really critical skill to careers. So knowing what's expected and what you're expected to achieve, that's the first part. The second part is actually getting to those things, but not having a shared understanding of the objectives is what leads to the first discount on results when working from home.
Yeah. One of the things I like to hear, or I think I've heard Mark say that I really like is without, when it comes to objectives, right? Without having that North Star, right? Without knowing where you're going, most of what we engage in terms of development or productivity is trying to find efficiencies, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're finding efficiencies, but you don't know where you're going, you're just potentially getting to the wrong place faster. And that's not what we want, right?
That's not helpful.
So we've got to know where we're going. Yeah.
Yeah. An accurate assessment of your work takes two things. So what we want at the end of the year is we understood our objectives and that we get credit for everything that we've done against those objectives. And that accurate assessment at the end of the year takes two things. First, clear instructions and measurements. You have to know what it is and you have to know how you're being measured. And the second is comprehensive communication of how you've done and understanding of the work you've done from the organization. And the communication in both channels is your manager. So it reminds me of one of the National Health Service in the UK has objectives. And one of the objectives is the length of the waiting list. So how long you have to wait before seeing a certain specialist, for example. And so the objective was we want to make those waiting lists shorter, which is, okay, that makes sense. We want people to wait less of a length of time before they see a certain specialist. Well, that's easy. You just go cut a bunch of people off the list and say they're not qualified or they haven't got a reason to see that specialist. And then the list comes right down, but people still aren't being helped. That wasn't the objective of a shorter waiting list, wasn't actually what we wanted to achieve. So that's why this stuff is quite difficult in the sense of the organization has to know what they're setting as the objective and that objective achieves the result they want, then your manager has to communicate it to you and you have to understand it in the same way. And then you have to get the results and then you have to tell them it has to go all the way back to, did we get the result that we wanted? And it goes back through three people. And that's where we have a lot of problems.
Right. Exactly. It's easy to quickly grasp how working from home gets in the way of this. I mean, if your manager, your manager is the conduit, right, for this information and the additional effort that it takes to communicate when one of you is working remotely reduces the amount, the quantity and quality of communication that happens. And we talk about that all the time when we talk about communication, right? It's not just quantity, it's quality as well, right? And so this makes much more likely that one or another or both of the messages between you and the organization is somehow flawed or incomplete, right? Some will claim that the reduction in credit seen in employees who work from home is caused by a bias for presenteeism of managers working in the office. Presenteeism, for those of you that don't know, is the expectation of managers that directs will be in the office between certain times doing certain things. Usually it also means an unrealistic expectation of hours worked. And this isn't it. It's not the managers only believe that their directs are working hard if they can see it. It's the understanding that it's the understanding that isn't communicated well, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you imagine you have two directs and the only instruction is that you give them is that they have to clear their inbox every day. But whatever job they're doing, they have to have zero emails at the end of the day. If you don't see them doing the work, but at the end of the day, both of their emails inboxes are empty, you can assume that they did, you will assume that they did the same work, that they achieved the same thing. They worked as hard as one another. But you could be really wrong. What if one had 400 emails and the other only had 40? Or what if one had 400 easy emails and one had 40 incredibly difficult emails? If half of them were spam and they could delete them immediately, there's all sorts of permutations of what could have been in those inboxes and the volume and the complexity of the work done that would change your view of how hard either of those two people were working. But the problem is you can't see it. And if you can't see it, you can only judge by the end result. And the end result is they both achieved the objective, which is they had empty inboxes. So you can't blame managers who don't properly assess their working from home directs or working remotely directs work for not being able to do that if the direct isn't telling them what they're working on and what they're doing.
Exactly.
Folks, it's getting to the end of the year. Maybe you ought to give yourself a Christmas present, and that would be becoming a licensee if you're not already one. It's only $200. We like to say Tiffany advice at Walmart prices. And it comes with all that you're used to. You've probably heard me say it before, which includes show notes for all of our shows and the entire archive of our shows for 16 plus years for both Manager Tools and Career Tools. But it also now comes with Executive Tools and the show notes thereof, and you cannot listen to Executive Tools unless you're a licensee. But in addition, it includes our interviewing series, probably our most popular digital product, the Resume Workbook, First Job Fundamentals, Effective Feedback, as well as Roadmap, and access to me when you have questions or concerns, the Interview Creation Tool, and much, much more. I hope you'll become a licensee. Licensees are the core of our community, and the revenue we make from licensees helps us spread the word about effective management all over the world.
So the next part we're going to talk about is you have fewer opportunities to step up or volunteer or be seen. The achievement of the objective set or getting the results expected is not enough for career growth. Those of you who have listened for a while, you know the Manager Tools promotion standard is not 100% being able to do your job 100%. It's deeper than that. It's being able to do your job at 100% and 50% of the next job, right? The job you want in order to be promoted or move to another level of the organization. And that level of that 50% of, call it, above and beyond, is what allows you to stand out among your peers, right? Among the potential other suitors for that other role. And working from home hinders your ability to do those things, to go above and beyond, to be involved in that 50% that we're talking about.
And again, it's not because you don't want to. It's because you don't know about the opportunities to practice that exist in the organization. If you want to do,
you don't know what you don't know.
Right. If you want to do 50% of the job you want, right, you have to find those opportunities to practice. Like stepping up to run a project that gives you experience with budgets or managing a small team or working with customers or whatever it is that you need to learn. It's covering for a manager's vacation or volunteering to help a colleague with an event that they're putting on so that you can learn about vendor management or customer contact. Or you offer to create a work breakdown structure in order to practice understanding how the parts of a project work together. But if you're not around to know that a project is in the offing and that work needs doing before potentially the project is approved, then you don't get the opportunity to volunteer for it. And then the first you know about it is somebody's done all that work and the project's approved and now you're working on the project and you miss that opportunity.
Yeah. The reduction in opportunities to volunteer or be volunteered for caused by working from home is really about communication. And there's fewer opportunities for those small one-off conversations. You know, the idea, people aren't as willing to put into an email or even into Slack or Teams an idea, right? Mm-hmm. They think, oh, well, in order to type this out, it's got to be somewhat more formal than just speaking out loud. And that's what you miss by not being there and not being present in the office.
And people don't ask you because they're like, I heard a week ago Andrew was really busy. And so I'm just going to assume that Andrew's still really busy.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that Andrew was at our M conference a week ago and now he's been in the office a week and he's caught up and next week he could do something is I have that update of information doesn't happen the same when I don't see him going for coffee at 10 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, weren't you really busy?
Right. You
know?
Yeah.
And he says, exactly. Oh, you know what? I'm caught up now. In which case I say, oh, in that case, I've got something you could help me with. And that those kind of off the cuff things just don't happen the same when you're working remotely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it comes back to, and we're probably going to, you know, this is sprinkled throughout this whole cast, is this idea of out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, your boss won't think of you in those situations because of the fewer quantities of times that you've communicated with them. And so because of that, it's like you're kind of out of mind because you're out of sight. And that's what we're trying to avoid here, right? We're trying to head that off.
And what's more, growth opportunities like that often come from outside of your team. So not just the three, four people that you work with, but the team that sits next to you or is downstream of you or upstream of you or whatever. So if you're communicating frequently with your team and your boss, it may be that you do have as good a relationship with them as if you were co-located. But that's almost certainly not true of people who are further out in the organization. You know, if a colleague on another team is putting together a cross-functional group and they don't have frequent conversation with you, you practically don't exist to them. And again, it's not that those people are deliberately excluding you. If they went to your boss and said, hey, I need someone from your team, it's potential that your boss would say, oh, take Andrew. He's awesome.
Right.
But if Kate comes along and Kate's thinking, oh, I need someone for this team, but I don't want to go and ask Andrew's boss, I'm just going to pick someone. Maybe she doesn't think of Andrew and she thinks of me instead. And so she asks me and I say yes. And now that position's filled and Andrew misses out on that opportunity again.
Yeah.
We tend to, especially for things which are above and beyond, especially for things that are outside of people's job description or not in their normal day-to-day, we tend to ask the people that we know are going to say yes. And those are the people that we have the best relationship with, and those are the people we communicate with most often, and those are the people that we work closest with or that we see often.
And I would just add to that, Wendy, I think we human beings, right? We don't want to be told no from the very infant stages, right? I mean, I have a one-year-old. I tell him no, he throws a tantrum, throws himself on the floor, right? Because we don't like as human beings being told no. And if I'm going to ask someone to do something that is not within their job, is above and beyond, I already have some hesitance around being told no. The way that I would naturally, probably without even thinking of it, couch that or be able to deal with that is being able to ask people that I can see their body language, I can see their facial expression, I can see their natural reaction to it, so that, I mean, we talk about this all the time with feedback, with other written communication. When you get someone who writes back, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. You don't know if they're saying, I'll do it, or if they're saying, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Right? You don't know because you don't have the tone or the inflection. And I think it's just natural for people to, if there's something like this, above and beyond, something a little extra, wanting to ask people that you can gauge their reaction better is just a natural human thing.
That's true. I was just thinking about, you know, you could do it on a Zoom call, right? You could say, hey, Andrew, will you stay with after the end of the meeting? And I have to, that is so awkward when there's like eight other people in the meeting. It's like, oh yeah, what do you two want? And if it's your boss that asks you, it's like, oh, they're going to get told off.
Oh, but, right, of course.
But it's so awkward of, you know, oh, we just want to have a conversation in private. It's so weird. So that's not an option.
It doesn't work the other way around either. The like, if by pure, you know, serendipity, you and I both join a big Zoom call and we happen to both be the two first ones in the room, it doesn't work there either, because you start a little bit of the conversation and then someone joins and now it's super awkward because we're like, well, I'll catch up with you later. And now that person's like, wait, what were you guys talking about?
I want to know what was so interesting.
Right.
Yeah, so weird. Yeah. So let's talk about what you can do to make this less weird, less awkward. And once you've accepted that there will be a hit to your results, like what can we do to mitigate that loss? So the first thing is develop and maintain and grow and track your performance. That was a lot of verbs, but it's all around performance. And we started by saying the lack of objective performance management to get your work full credit is part of the reason that working from home harms your career. And so it stands to reason that part of the solution is perform well and then make sure the people that need to know that you're performing well. It's know how complicated career clearing your inbox was so that they give you the appreciation that you deserve for clearing your inbox.
Right, exactly. And, you know, this starts with ensuring both of those components are in place that we talked about, right? First, clear instructions and measurements from the organization to you via your manager. And second, comprehensive communication and understanding of the work that you've done by the organization, right? Communicating it via your manager. And so individual contributors and managers to not knowing what their objectives are or how they're being measured against those objectives, that's a widespread problem. That is a big issue. And anyone who wants to progress in their career needs to know these two pieces of information, going back to what we talked about earlier, right? So, but those of us who are working from home, I mean, this is paramount. This is critical. You cannot, you know, not even thrive or grow. I mean, you can't just survive if you don't know these two pieces of information. So managers, you know, since we're talking about managers, those managers who you know, spring that performance feedback conversation, you know, where we talk about goals that we set in March and now we haven't talked about them for 9 months and now we're talking about them again in December. Those are bad managers, right? Those are bad managers across the board. But it's too easy for those managers to, you know, blame your failures or the lack of achieving those objectives on you working from home, the fact that you're, you know, remote, rather than their failure to tell you where you're going off track or, you know, correcting, making those corrections, right, as you're driving down the road, those small little corrections, rather than saying, hey, it's December and now we're in the ditch because we didn't make any corrections along the way.
It's way too easy. So if you can't get a clear answer about your objectives from your manager, then supply them yourself, which is decide what you think your objectives should be and send them to your manager, at least to start the conversation. And if you have no other information, if they're not going to give you that conversation, if they won't tell you whether you're right or wrong, or if they just give you the organization's objectives, then start tracking your own performance against those objectives. The ones they've given you, even if you think they're wrong, and the ones that you think you should have. At least at the end of the year, have the information to prove that you've done the work, rather than assuming that somebody else is doing that for you, or assuming that, oh, these objectives aren't going to matter at the end of the year and they're not tracking any of the work, or even getting to the end of the year and thinking, do you know what? I can't deal with this manager who won't tell me what my objectives are. I'm looking for a new job. And then not knowing what to write on your resume because you haven't tracked your projects or you haven't tracked your achievements. So please, don't hear it. Right now, write down your objectives and start tracking your achievements.
And if you're struggling with that, I mean, we have several podcasts. The one that comes to mind is Getting Your Goals from Your Boss, which will take you through an exercise of, you know, coming up with that list by looking at the work you do, looking at the work your team does within the organization, all of that, and then getting that alignment with your boss, or at least communicating that these are what you perceive your objectives to be.
And if you don't have any one-on-ones or monthly meetings, or, you know, if your boss, please tell me your all bosses do at least monthly meetings, even though they're ineffective, but you know,
right.
If you have one-on-ones, awesome. But if you don't have any of those, you will also need to supply your manager with regular updates about your performance against those objectives. And that doesn't mean monthly PowerPoints, you know, presentation about how I did. But what we're talking about is a daily, weekly, monthly cadence of reporting. You may have to set the expectations and provide the measurements if your boss is lacking in this area. And so many are.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I mean, if you're struggling with that concept, right, which I do believe we also have some podcasts on that as well, but your job, you know, part of your job, and this is one of those unwritten things, is to fill in the gaps where your boss has gaps, right? And has opportunities. And so, yeah, if you're struggling with this, if you're like, well, I shouldn't have to do this, welcome to life in your career, because, you know, people who do well are the folks who identify, you know, here's where my boss has maybe a gap or isn't real strong in, and here's how I can help fill that for them. And for not just them, but for the organization, right? Yeah. If your boss has a gap, the organization has a gap, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's important for you to be able to fill that in. And selfishly, you need to do that for you and your career as well.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we've got through the negative effects. We've given you at least one thing that you can do. So let's give you a chance to start that this week, because it's a big one, developing and tracking and growing your performance. And then we'll come back next week with the other things that you can do. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.